Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
As you know, we live in a digital age where our lives are increasingly occupied with what can be seductive activities: texts, posts, games, tags, and tweets. We use devices that are changing how we live, work, and interact with one another. But in the midst of this digital revolution, critics worry about the price we might be paying in adopting new ways of connecting. This morning, we begin a weekly series we're calling Digital Lives. In part one, WBUR's Iris Adler reports on the transformation of family and friendship in the digital age.
I'll give you something to eat. Okay. Come on.
It's a quiet Saturday afternoon at the Powers home in Orleans. Author William Powers, his wife Martha Sherrill, and their 15-year-old son William are quietly observing the Sabbath. It's not a religious Sabbath, though. They call it their Internet Sabbath. No video games, no computers, no smartphones, from Friday night through Sunday evening.
It was shocking, that first weekend. We all remember it vividly, how hard it was. It almost had an existential feeling of, I don't know who I am anymore because the Internet's gone. And after a few months, it sort of hardened into a habit that we all began to realize we were gaining a lot from.
Friday night would come, and we would be cheering. Cheering. We knew we had these two glorious days ahead of us.
In our always-on lives, there are many, like the Powers, who worry we're too tethered to our digital devices, too immersed in the digital world, not present enough in the real world.
It's hard. It's really hard to not go to the glowing rectangle in our hands.
Baratunde Thurston, comedian, author, and social critic, says we can't seem to resist the lure of our smartphones, even in the company of others.
It's like a little gift. This demands my attention. Someone's talking about you right now. Oh, yeah, I'm important right now, according to this little piece of the world. So the idea of being at a dinner and having your phone on the table is to say, I got my own little private opt-out option. You're not the only game in town.
What's the impact on our relationships? One recent study found the mere presence of cell phones in face-to-face conversations inhibits the development of closeness and trust and lessens the amount of empathy we feel from our partners. The study reinforces the thinking of some prominent skeptics, chief among them MIT professor Sherry Turkle.
I think technology causes every generation to reflect on their values.
Turkle applauds the many benefits of digital technology, but says we still have a lot to learn about how to use it without undermining our values.
We're not meant to get rid of this. We're meant to use it for our human purposes. But we first have to figure out what our human purposes are. And I'm pretty sure that they're not sitting at the dinner table not talking to our 8-year-olds.
We've all heard the concerns about how these technologies interfere with family life, but Turkle says, in the course of conducting hundreds of interviews, it's surprising how often it's young people complaining about their parents' obsession with these devices.
They complain about parents picking them up at school, but sitting there in the car, not even making eye contact until they finish that last email, or certainly it's sports games, coming to the sports game, but not even seeing them make their touchdown or their play because they're doing their email at the game.
The kids are plenty distracted as well. According to a Kaiser Family Foundation study, young people ages 8 to 18 now spend nearly every waking moment when they're not in school using media, more than 7.5 hours a day. And half of all Americans say they prefer to communicate digitally than talk in person. For many, even phone conversations are too much of a burden.
When I see my phone ring, I actually get annoyed. I'm like, why would you interrupt?
Again, Baratunde Thurston.
What I'm doing right now is of the utmost importance. Are you hurt? Are you dying? What it requires you to interrupt me, because now if I answer that phone, I don't know how long that interaction is going to take. If you text me, I can see it, I can acknowledge it, I can judge it.
Texting, its brevity, practicality, and utility has tremendous appeal. According to a Pew survey, teens now text 100 times a day.
I can honestly say I can't remember the last time I had a phone conversation with either of my parents. It has entirely been text messages.
That's Boston University senior Sierra Wade, a journalism student who says she's highly dependent on texting.
In a text message, I mean, nobody can hear your voice. So if I say I'm great, I mean, you can believe it, but I might actually be like crying as I'm typing, I'm great. It's like texting allows me to mask.
MIT's Sherry Turkle worries that as we ramp up our digital communication, we're lowering the quality of our conversations.
It's not so good for the sort of nuance that you get when you're in conversation with your friends, for sharing intimacies, for sharing difficult news, for saying you're sorry, for really getting to know someone. It gives us that sense of connection without really having the demands of intimacy and the responsibilities of intimacy.
But Nancy Baim of Microsoft Research doesn't share these concerns. She's convinced that digital communication enhances relationships.
The evidence consistently shows that the more you communicate with people using devices, the more likely you are to communicate with those people face-to-face. Humans are desperate to connect with one another. We really want to have some kind of profound, authentic connection, and we live in fear that we're going to lose this. And so every technology that comes along raises that fear.
Many do fear this technology will have a more harmful effect on human interactions because they believe it's more distracting, more addictive than previous technologies. The psychiatric world is still debating whether so-called internet addiction qualifies as a true disease, similar to other addiction disorders. But researcher Nancy Baim remains skeptical.
Until I see some really compelling evidence that technology is addictive in a way that other things before have not been, that newspapers were not, that television was not, that books were not, I'm not buying that this has some sort of special power to control our behavior.
Whether or not this technology presents a unique challenge, no one would disagree that the lure is strong, and many are now trying to strike a balance between their plugged and unplugged lives. We're seeing the advent of digital detox retreats, device-free drink nights, tech-free cold spots, and even apps that help us take a break from technology. Industry leaders like former Google CEO Eric Schmidt are also striking a cautionary note. He told this year's graduating class at Boston University to make sure they turn their devices off.
Learn where the off button is. Take your eyes off that screen and look into the eyes of the person that you love. Have a conversation, a real conversation, with the friends who make you think, with the family who make you laugh. Life is not lived in the glow of a monitor. Life is not a series of status updates. Life is not about your friend count. It's a friends who actually you can count on. Right?
And that brings us back to the internet Sabbath at the Powers home in Orleans. 15-year-old William is spending the Saturday afternoon practicing his saxophone. And in what must be music to his parents' ears, he explains the value of their weekends offline.
I think that if we were on the internet on the weekends, we'd also be sending links and things to each other, and we'd be talking about internet stuff, but we get to talk about real life. I haven't really missed anything, and I've really gained.
For many, who are rarely more than an arm's length from their smartphones or laptops, an internet Sabbath may be too ambitious. But experts say we'd all benefit from some time away from the pings and beeps and chimes to evaluate our constantly changing relationship with technology and with each other. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Iris Adler.
Next week in our series, Digital Lives, WBUR's Kerry Goldberg looks at what it means to grow up on video games.
Gaming has affected my life in a huge way. Very overwhelmingly positive, though I will admit that there's been a lot of dark spots where gaming gets out of balance.